So much. All right, it's real now. Thanks a bunch, everybody, for coming. It's an amazing opportunity to have Dr. Sid Choi joining us tonight from Brazil, also known as Jade Margaret or Jaji by her Portuguese-speaking friends in Brazil. Dr. Choi is a founding member of the Global University for Sustainability, which has made a vast impact in China and parts east, and works with an amazing set of colleagues. In speaking with her, I think that we have a really amazing opportunity. They're working in rural China to try to help. They're working on this initiative that's all about cultural revitalization, a cultural education program, and opportunities for youth, for young people to get involved and to be able to bring their agency. I think that's exactly what we're looking for here in Vermont, is how can young people get involved in the agricultural economy with agency and be able to recognize how they have a role and how their work is playing out in their community, and be able to locate themselves in some part of the regenerative workforce. And of course, at the conservation district, we're focusing on the regenerative agriculture workforce. So we're going to hear from Dr. Choi about the history of the rural revitalization movement in China, and how some of the lessons learned from that, some of the background of that applies to what's going on globally. And then we'll have an opportunity to have a discussion with her about how some of that applies to our context here in Vermont and around the region. So before I mess up the introduction any further, I'll pass it up to Dr. Choi. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jennifer and Henry. And I prepare PowerPoint, and I already sent to Henry and Jennifer. And if you are interested, you can also get the PowerPoint for further understanding. Okay. And thank you very much for inviting me to talk about the rural regeneration in China. And as Henry mentioned, the first part will be about the historic background about the rural reconstruction movement. And the second part will cover the government and also grassroots organization current rural regeneration work, and particularly focus on culture and educational projects aimed at mobilizing the younger generation get involved in this social movement. And first of all, I would like to explain a little bit more about the nature of Chinese society. For at least 4,000 years, Chinese society actually practiced the small-scale peasant farming and village communities. And political, economic, and social stability depend largely on the majority of peasants having access to land resources. So every dynasty, they are very focused on whether the majority of peasants has the land resources. And we will use the term land redistribution and a tax waiving as a principle whether this dynasty can exist or be overthrown by the rebel or by the rights or the angriest peasants. And on the at the same time, I would also to mention a brief a little bit about the ancient Chinese philosophy, because according there are nine schools of thought, and particularly儒家, Daojia, they are the two main thought in ancient Chinese philosophy. And one's key, I think one key principle, that means the Confucian theory believed that the real evil is not scarcity but unequal distribution. So the practice of land redistribution actually is very is a kind of core of Confucianism. And in terms of the how human behavior and how can a harmonious relation with society and with the nature is the principle of Taoism. So it's focused on how the heaven and humans can be united in a harmonious way, and we humans should follow the law of nature. And the another main thought is agriculturalism. However, this school is quite radical because they think that rulers should work in the fields with their subjects. That means that is every person is equal, and they have to work on the field, no matter you are king or queen or the rulers. So this is quite radical, and to a certain extent, sometimes is marginalized by the others' school of thought. However, culture, because Chinese has a long history of has a long history of a grand society. So this school is also very important. However, this school has a very radical element. So to certain so is also marginalized in the mainstream. And the other thought is engaged the Buddhism. Of course, it comes from India. However, their key concept also how we help the common people. So you understand that in ancient Chinese theology, we also look into the question of equality, particularly the access to land, and also how we relate to the nature. So this is the our legacy. We also raise this question and respond to this question ever and permanent respond to this fundamental questions. And the picture show that the Dazhou rock carvings actually has a mixture, as a kind of ancient crafting with has great influence by three main thought: Buddhism, Confucian, and Taoism. So in Chinese society, actually is a kind of a tolerance to let the different kinds of school exist. And they share the same vision that how human relate to the nature, and how can human society enjoy a peace and also equality. And the movement we is named Rural Reconstruction is because from for over 150 years, nearly 200, China has pursued industrialization and modernization, and it's caused the rural destruction. So that means the rural reconstruction is his historic background is the rural destruction by the policy of industrialization and modernization in early in the 19th century. At that time is a Qing Dynasty, the late Qing Dynasty, and also Republic of China, and even the after 1949. And this is a long history for over for almost 200 years. China still practice industrialization and modernization, and it's caused the sequence of rural destruction. So this movement were developed as a political project to defend peasant communities and agriculture. Is a kind of a grassroots effort apart from parallel to or in tension with projects initiated by the state or by political parties. And there are two ways is named the Rural Reconstruction Movement. The first way is the in the early 20th centuries and until the end of until the Communist Party of China took power in 1949. However, the CPC still practice many kinds of rural policy, and I will explain why. And the second way is I would say that we all our colleagues joined this movement. It's a new rural reconstruction movement in the early 21st century. And in the first wave of rural reconstruction movement, the leaders, for example, Liang Shumin, he is a Buddhist and also Confucius, and they all mentioned that the building of a countryside is not only for is not only the building of society, the countryside, but the to build the whole Chinese society has a new structure, and that means it's kind of a national movement, but the base is to strengthen the rural society, particularly the peasants' organization. And another leader is Yan Yang Chu. Actually, he's received his education in the United States, and he also a Christian. So you can understand that during that early 20th centuries, at that time, China faced the imperialist invasion and also the policy of the industrialization and modernization, and it caused the rural destruction. At that time, many intellectuals tried to think about what is the way. What's the solution for the majority? That means the rural society, rural communities. So they are all focused on how to organize peasants to strengthen their negotiating power in face of the imperialist invasion and also the statist exploitation. And of course, during at the same period, the Communist Party of China also did the peasant organizing. However, the difference is they used the armed struggle. So this also is kind of a legacy of Chinese revolution, because whenever the dynasty, ever new dynasty, the first policy is the land redistribution and tax exemption. So the at that time the Chinese Communist Party used this ancient slogan, land to the tillers, and also to after they took in power, they practiced the land redistribution. This is the authority of Chinese Communist Party of China. And however, after the 1949, it doesn't mean that the rural regeneration stopped, and China, the CPC still continues to organize many activities to, for example, literacy campaign and the improvement for science and technology, water irrigation, also the peasant organization for marketing and finance, and also health campaign. So you find that the this legacy, that means how we strengthen the agrarian society or rural communities, is so important to every dynasty and also to every ruling regime. And you can see that the this is the two this is a twin pyramid of stability in contemporary China, because you see the base, that That means the majority, I mean the peasants, they have access to land, and also they have their own house. So and at the same time, the government invests a lot of money to improve infrastructure in rural societies. So you will find that the base is very comparatively stable. And I was to point out one unique figure of Chinese society nowadays, because China practices the collective ownership of land. The urban land belongs to the state, and the rural land belongs to a village committee. That means land is not for sale in the market. And even though you buy the apartment in Beijing, Shanghai, or Shenzhen, but however, you only buy that apartment, but not the land. So after this is a contract, it only the residential building only lasts for 50 years. So after that, the state have to intervene and negotiate again about the land ownership. And for the rural land is belongs to village committees. So it's not belong to individual peasants. And you see the renminbi banknote, you find that Mao Zedong is because the is symbolize the Communist Party of China's finish or the land revolution. That means it follow the tradition to do the land redistribution. And so China in nature is a big country, but with small peasantry. Nowadays, we have about 2.5 million villages, and we practice collective land ownership, and there are about 230 million peasant households. And every household has around 7.8 mu of land. 1 hectare is equal to 50 mu. So it's a really a small plot of land. And during whenever there's a crisis, and those the peasants very insist that they have the they have a solution in their home village because they have still land at home village. And so no matter they go to city or return to home, the peasants still have their base. That means they still have the contracted land, that means farmland, and also the housing land, that means their own house. And the Communist Party still keep their promise that to extend or to renew the peasant right of land use for another 30 or 30 more years. Please pay attention to its right of land use, not the ownership. So the ownership is belong to village committee, is the belong to collectivity, and each peasant household only has the right of land use. And according to our research under the Professor Wen Tiejun supervision, and we produce a book called Ten Crises: The Political Economy of China's Development, 1949 to 2020, and it's an open access. Please, if you have time, please download and read it, because it's a really a good book to understand the China political development. And we look into the history for the history of New China, and for the over 70 years, and rural China is actually the base of China deal with the crisis. And it has a stability whenever there are crises, for example, the economic crisis and also the pandemic. And we if we look into the history, and there's a three race during the Cultural Revolution, and at that time China sent about the 40 million youth to the countryside. And you see the this is the words from Chairman Mao's, and it's focused on how the educator youth can work together with the peasant and workers and to be integrate as a new collectivity. And since the 1990s, and China has adopted the export-oriented industrialization, and China became has become a wealth factories, and it exploits quite a lot of natural resources and also the labor resources. So at the time, the rural society has a lot of problems. And however, since the to the 21st century, and the ruling party start to solve this the so-called San Nong, that means the three-dimensional agrarian sector, peasant, rural society, and agriculture. So it becomes a the utmost important policy of the Communist Party of China policy. And the official term is the policy of new socialist countryside. Another 2007, it's call for the ecological civilization. And you will find that the background of this rural policy or ecological policy is against the background of the ancient financial crisis in 1997 to 99, and also global financial crisis in 2008. That means during that period or before the crisis, the China has a policy to tackle the rural problems. And that means the more the government and the grassroots level in devote into solve the rural problem, the more China has more force or strength to deal with the crisis. And this is all the for over the 2 decades, the government has promote or to implement the policy, particularly to deal with the rural problem. And of course, the latest policy is named Rural Revitalization. So the backgrounds, you see, one is the COVID-19 pandemic, and the other is the U.S. sanctions. So that means the ruling parties is forced to deal with the to strengthen the rural society, because you have to deal with the pandemic, health crisis, and also the financial crisis. And you see that this is explained by why the rural society is so important. The Minister of Agriculture and Rural Affairs mentioned that due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the downturn in the world economy, more than 30 million migrant rural workers out of job returned to their village home. But the general social situation remains stable. The reason is that peasants still have a piece of free land, a farmland, and a house in the countryside. And to deal with the U.S. Sanctions, and because the broken of the global supply chain and economic downturn, the government has implemented the so-called the internal circulation plus international circulation. But internal circulation implies the domestic economy. That means particularly rural economy. And government invests quite a lot of money, about the US dollar 4.85 trillion, into new infrastructure projects such as 5G internet, industrial internet, cloud computing, blockchain, data centers, smart computing centers, and smart transportation. So you now China has a very good network of transportation, and also the internet. So Even they will use this social media to sell their products, agricultural products, and that means how these communities, rural communities, also enjoys the benefits same as the citizens in the city, and so you've. Why I use the rural regeneration? Because no matter the government and also we the grassroots organization also to work together to do the rural regeneration. The official they will use the new socialist countryside and or the latest the rural revitalization. However, because we pay respect to our senior, at that time they use the rural reconstruction movement. So we follow their terms. So we use the new rural reconstruction movement. No matter the official or the grassroots, we all think that the rural society is our future. And we start the movement in around 2000 years. And we at that time from 2004 to 2007, we set up, we innovate a high school into James Yan Rural Reconstruction Institute. At that time, we already advocate the agroecology and to do the peasant organization and particularly the student, the university student organizing. And use from this picture, you saw that you see that we the encourage or organize the university student to go to the rural society and to do the farm work and even spend 1 year to live and work together with the peasant households. And we also organize the help the peasant to organize themselves and in terms of the production and also the marketing. And we also invite the Indian scientist Vinod Wainer to talk about the Kerala people science movement. And so we organized to facilitate this kind of international exchange program. We have organized 11 sub-sub forum on sustainability. But I will let's see if we will talk it later. And so you will find that not only we organize the persons to involve in the production and marketing. However, we also to organize the elderly to organize themselves, particularly the arts performance and cultural program. And apart from that, we also do have the some volunteer groups from architects to build the eco agriculture and the environmental protection buildings. And of course I will focus, I would particularly mention about this the creations or for creation of health centers for a 312 meridian exercise. This is initiated by a an a doctor and he practiced the traditional TCM, traditional Chinese medicines, and he provide the volunteer medical service for the villages and to mobilize the peasants and the general people to practice 312 meridian exercise. And this later during the pandemic is an minister has a advice or recommend exercise for the for health program. And this is some picture about our experiment to build the echo tour and also the echo pig raising buildings. And in 2008, we set up a farm called Little Donkey Farm, and we organized many activities. And for example, we have some the urban the fair trade between the urban consumers and also the rural producer. However, we also have program to let the citizen become a weekend farmers. And also to provide many programs for the families. And we also have organized some internship for those university students and also those the university common project, for example. And we this the dong Little Donkey Farm is located in Beijing suburb, and we organize many cultural activities, for example, Dragon Boat festivals and those Tai Chi performance and weekend farmers market. And you see, we try to let the urban, the people and also the rural peasant household work together. So and not only the university student, but also the particularly the middle class families. And this is the pamphlet. It shows that the we have the internship with Lingnan University or other university. They will have the internship in the in a Little Donkey Farm for 3 to 6 months. So this activity organized by the young generation. So they will work on the farm, and at the same time they will do the for example, the networking and how to do the marketing and also do the publication. So and at the same time, as I mentioned before, the government also promote has a policy to promote. We have to train the a new peasantry. That means That means they have the knowledge of farming, organic farming, and also have two kinds of love. That means love your home villages and also love the nature. And another we also set up the another center is called the Liang Shu Ming. As you note, Liang Shu Ming is the our pioneer the leader of rural reconstruction movement in the 20th century. And the center is named after is and Liang Shu Ming Rural Reconstruction Center. Their program is basically provide the program for the university students to spend 1 year in the peasant household, and also to help the peasant organize the co-op. And every year they also have the national congress of the for the sharings. And the reason we have the campaign is called the Loving Home Village Campaigns. And we try to recognize and make those people at the grassroots be visible because they have devoted their time, energy, and money to build their home, to strengthen or to improve their home villages. So this is kind of alliance or the let those people can work together and to find the beauty of their home villages. And now maybe I showed a music produced by the campaign, and you will see from the photos and the video, and you can have a sense of this campaign. And I will put the lyrics in the chat box for your understanding. So, okay. And yeah, I put the lyrics in the chat box. Okay, and you see the link. You can see the link is called is from Bilibili. Bilibili actually is a very popular social media platform, particularly the young generation. And Professor Wang many videos about his lectures all put on this on this social media platform, and the viewers has over a million. And now I will show the song. Yes, let me see. And for example, through the this Loving Your Home Village campaign, and we also identified some the young people that really contribute themselves to their home village. For example, the this young man named Yang Zhenxi. He's come from the Dong ethnic group in Guizhou province. So and he not only involved, I mean the has to return to his home village to become a farmer again, but also the most important, he organized the local farmers, particularly those elderly, because many young people all go to the city. However, he returned to his home village and organized the local elderly peasants, organized them into co-op and practice the agroecology, and also to preserve and also and. Can you see my PowerPoint? Oh, sorry. Let me see.
Not seeing a PowerPoint.
Yeah, can you see my PowerPoint?
Yes.
Yeah. So, the most important is he organized those peasants to preserve the old seeds and practice the agroecology, and also to resume to revitalize the animal, particularly the cattle. So this is very important, I think, in future, how we can to rebuild our relations to the animals and in terms of the ecological crisis, and also to preserve the oases. And then these two, and three, of course, the organized, the still believe in the importance of collectivity. So these three elements, I think, we should to promote and recognize his contributions. And this is the picture, how beautiful their village is in Guizhou province. And so it's become a model promoted by the local provincial government. And this is our different kinds of initiative and experiment. So you find that we don't have a centralized organization. It's just kind of a network, and we have different projects, and it's a project oriented. There's some funding from the local government, and also from university, and from personal donations. And so it's a kind of a project oriented, and we organize, and also particularly, however, we organize the forum, and also the National Congress to facilitate the exchange and experience of different kinds of initiative. So this is our network. And in the last 10 minutes, maybe I speak a little, I talk a little bit about why the we not only focus on the agriculture, I mean the agroecology. However, we should shift all our attention to the health issue, particularly what we learn from the COVID-19 pandemic. Actually, we haven't yet overcome this pandemic. However, we should learn from this pandemic. We have an old Chinese saying that's to avoid a small disturbance, stay in a city. To avoid a big upheaval, stay in a village. So we have this, the ancients, the wisdom is also teach us that village is our is for safety, and you can enjoy the stability and also security. And as we all know, that the COVID actually is the version 2 of SARS. And why we have a particularly experience, because in 2003, quite a lot of Hong Kong people and Chinese people die in this SARS pandemic. And of course, a short period later, the SARS disappear. However, it come back in 2019, and as we all know, is named as SARS-CoV-2. And now the virus mutate, and we haven't overcome. However, this experience in fighting the COVID-19 let us understanding the ancient wisdom is very important, particularly because we have the we understand or we know that this is also a chance for the revival the traditional Chinese medicine, because TCM save a lot of people in mainland China during the COVID-19 pandemic. And apart from the TCM is a broad sense, is also we practice a lot of the different kinds of methods. For example, the acupuncture, and also the motions, and the exercise. And as I mentioned before, the 3-2-1 meridian exercise, and those for example light silken movement. So in we understand that this is we not only we have good and cheap affordable Chinese medicine, but we also have to practice different kinds of exercise to enhance your immune system. And this is particularly important because we know that now the big pharma control the medical system, the global medical system, like the agribusiness control the global food system. So once we challenge the global food system, on the other hand, we also have to challenge the global medical system controlled by the big pharma. And I think one dimension should be how we revival our the traditional Chinese medicine, and also to practice how can we enhance our immune system. And the one important point I would like to emphasize is to during this period, and we find that many initiative community initiative to protect themselves, and they will do many voluntary works, and also to provide this TCM for free. So you this kind of practice is very important. That means the whenever crisis appear, how communities can tackle this is very important. And so I think we have to cherish this community mobilization very much, not only in the urban, but also in the village. You see, during that period, the village practice lockdown. Why? Because they have autonomy. They have self-sufficiency. For example, in Jiangxi province, we have the women. We work with the local women to set up a women credit union. And during that period, they are to mobilize many volunteer to do the home visits, and also to distribute the TCM. And you find that because of the we also enjoy the benefits of 1949 land revolution, because you see Each peasant household has their own land and also the house, and that means they have certain extent space for social distancing. So this is, and also they have access to land. That means they has access to food. It's quite different from the urban people. They always have the insecurity of food and medicine. And this is the Chinese medicine, very popular to tackle the COVID, 莲花清瘟还有金花清瘟. And why one we have to emphasize the this is the Chinese medicine is cheaper than the priceless medicine, because the difference is almost 300 something, the price of the price difference is almost 300 times. So how we can let the general people have the good, effective, and affordable medicine, I think is very important, particularly in face of the coming the next pandemic. And however, when we look in the history of TCM, we will find that the actually TCM is subjugated by Western medicine since the 1929, because at that time there's a case, the audience to abolish the TCM. However, they are resistant from the society. However, now we have the problem. That means the TCM practitioner all had less than 10%. However, whenever there are a pandemic or a health crisis, TCM appear and appear again. So I think it's our challenging task to revival TCM, and that means at the same time revival the agroecology. And that means revival rural communities. So, in my opinion, when we talk about rural regeneration, there's two dimensions. One, to revival the small peasantry and rural communities, which takes food security and also the health security in local people hands. And because I think we all know that the big farm has earned a huge of profit from the pandemic. So how can we get back our control over health, health sovereignty, and also of course food sovereignty? I think we have to shift our attention to the traditional medicine again. And the final concluding remarks is that there are always local initiatives showing possibility for the collective use of resources and people voluntary participation in social life. They result from people's efforts to find solution to problem created by the imposition of directives and organization from above, according to objectives of modernization in competition with the West. And so how to mitigate the harmful effects of globalization with capital flow and labor migration, we must return to localization, recommunalization, and re-ruralization. The alternative paths goes for small peasantry, ecological agriculture, self-sufficiency, and community regeneration. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Professor Choi. So at this point, we're just going to open it up to questions, if anybody has anything they would like to clarify or ask about.
Hello, I have one question, a little bit. Thank you for your work, by the way, and all that. One of the challenges I had noticed, and me being here in Vermont, I'm knowledgeable, but definitely not an expert, and I make mistakes just like everyone else. But I'm wondering if there's such a thing as using smaller words. It's like revitalization. I think if you were in grade school, that would be a big word. And from my own personal experience, I like to use littler words, and I like how you use the words peasants. I once used the words peasants, and folks didn't much like that word. But if you think about it worldwide, it's a common word, and
Buster,
there's a lot of
you got a
peasants here in
question.
Vermont. Well, my question is, how can we use smaller words to get a bigger audience involved if you're undereducated and poor? Does that make sense?
Sure.
It'd be like that big word and making it smaller.
We'll give Dr. Choi an opportunity to answer. Thanks, Buster.
Yeah. Okay. You mean the peasant is a big word, right?
No, I like the word peasant. That is a good word. But revitalization, is a big word. Agriculturalism is a big word. I think farming is a smaller word, and revitalization might be a different word if it was a smaller word.
I think what Buster's getting at is the challenge that we face in the agroecology community, trying to translate some of the academic studies and some of the work of that community that has a more academic communication into a more accessible language for a broader audience.
I mean, because I provide the examples, right? Experience come from the mainland China, and in Chinese, I mean mainland Chinese context, Nongmin, that means this involved in the agriculture and also the farming. So to our people, this is not a it's a common word, and we all know that. So and of course, in I maybe in the United States is different. So how I use the word, I think, is based in the historical context. And as I present, we have a long history of the peasantry, and particularly small peasantry is not land law. So to us, I mean, small peasantry is already become a tradition, and I think this is exactly a big difference from the developed country or even the developing country with the big land law system like in Brazil. So I find the difference when they use the farmer, they refer to the latifundio, that means the big land law. However, in the farmer in China may be only a small, I mean the small plot, a farmer with a small plot of land. So I understand when we use the peasants, of course we have to situate in historical context. However, I mean I have to emphasize that the China has according to Mao, we only had experience of a semi colonization. That means we basically are the indigenous people. So I think it's different from the experience in United States. So so when we say this peasant, small peasant, we means the indigenous peasant. Of course, Han practice. We also have the ethnic tribes from the Mongolia and Tibet and Muslims. So they have different. They do not practice the farming. However, the majority is practice. I mean the farming. I'm not sure whether I respond to your questions. So when I use that, I put it in a historical context.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tree.
Thank
Jennifer.
you.
Thank you so much. I've got a question around the structure of the village committees and the communal land ownership. And could you describe a bit more about how those function and how decisions are made? And then also like who becomes a decision maker? Is it just inherited or is there a process to being included on that village committee?
And the you note the there are almost 900 million of Chinese community party of China in different level. So each level has a party member has the general secretary of a different level, even the village level. So there's a two system. One is party system, another is the so-called the administrative system. So the leader is mainly the Communist Party member, and the other leader is the village head. So this is two system at different level. And that's the I mean the because you know that the 1949 land revolution, that means each peasant household has their own plot of farmland and housing land, but at the same time the village has the collective construction land. That means they will I mean the village level is composed of the of course parties member and also parties member and also they are also local villages. You understand? So they the that village committee will decide or discuss the land or redistribution for several years. Maybe different village had different situation. However, because some maybe some die or some newborn baby, they will do this redistribution in certain period. However, those religious committee is select by themselves. And
Each people of the village select or the committees?
sorry?
The people in the village select or the committees on the in the village select?
The people select. But you know that we are not practice so-called the voting, something like that. But we all know that who are the respecter the villages. So this kind of I would say that is an informal selection, not exactly a formal voting, this kind of selection. But they the most the elderly or the most probably the elderly or with a high education or with a good virtues, most this kind of people, or they are party member and they are will be select as a committee members. And in terms of the ownership, because they won't they can't just sell the land. It's not private land. However, the village committee can negotiate with the outsider to have some common projects. Or the village committee can, for example, some the village committee, they will let all the land do the collective management of land to have some collective enterprise, something like that. And some village, they don't have this kind of collective management of land. They will do it by themselves. However, they can't sell the land on the market. It's illegal. Yeah.
That's connected to my question, actually. Well, I have two questions. So my first question is, like here in the United States, where a lot of people, there's no way to retire except, or to have retirement funds except to sell their home or their land. And so people kind of hoard the land or sell it for a really large amount where new farmers can't access that land. So I'm just curious a little more about that example of how land is passed from a new generation, from an old generation of farmers to a new generation of farmers. And then my second question is how you work with conserving natural resources and biodiversity and protecting the ecosystem and clean water, and at the same time, these kind of conflicting issues of providing enough food for everyone. If you could speak to that a little.
The land ownership or land transfer. Well, basically within the territory, because the village is you mean that the villages have three levels, right? In terms of kinship, in terms of blood, and also the locality, and also the career or the neighbor. But there's a natural, we call this a natural villages. That means they have boundary. So if you are the member of that village, the membership is permanent. That means they will within do the redistribution, readjustment within this boundary. Unless they think that some nowadays because of the rural urban, that's kind of interactions. And if that village committee recognize some people have made great contribution, they will let them stay in that village. However, not have the land. However, they get these membership, however, without land. But land revolution, that means each village has their land property, do the distribution among their membership. So sometimes, for example, some women, they got married, maybe they moved to other village. They suppose they also have the land in the village that she married. However, once she got divorced, she also have whether they have land in the previous in her parents' village or in ex-husband village. So that means they will have a guarantee. So this permanentship, that means that you are registered has officially registered as a peasant household. However, in reality, this kind of membership is permanent. Yeah, of course. Because it's now is the Communist Party still control. It's still a Communist Party regime. So it's still practice or maintain the legacy of land redistribution. Yeah, it's different from I think from United States, right? The land is private. You can sell it, buy it. In China, no. Particularly in rural land. But however, the village committee may be signing a contract with the outsider company to do some kind of business, but only the by contract, not sale. Even there are so-called the land transferred, for example, because quite a lot of people go to the city, and the land they won't abandon, but they will maybe let the neighbors do the farming and share the products, something like that. Yeah, but legally speaking, no, it's not for sale. And government understand it because whenever there are big crises, we have a huge population, and those population where they go, once they lose job, and what can they do? Yeah, so it's really a challenging problem for government. If many people lose land, that means they don't have a stable life. That means it means there will be a lot of crimes. And we can see in those developed countries like Brazil, India, there are huge slum area. We have poverty, but we don't have extreme poverty.
Thank you for that.
And my second question was about how the villages are working to preserve natural resources and prevent pollution, erosion, and protect biodiversity and ecosystems, but also grow in food.
Mm-hmm. And China has a high self-sufficiency of rice and wheat. We have almost above 85%, previously maybe 90%. However, in terms of soybean, no, we import from United States, Brazil, Argentina. However, in terms of rice and wheat, we don't need to import. Yeah, we have our own rice production and wheat production. So it's very important, particularly for the majority. You will see that many problems about the food in developing country because they still practice colonial practice, monoculture like Brazil, or the some, for example, they rely on the raw export raw materials and practice monoculture, only grow the cash crop. Like coffee and sugar or sugar cane and or the cattle raising, something like that. So so this is how can we have self-sufficiency? That means the land is for food grain production for the general people. And I think in China we still practice this kind of self-sufficiency. For example, the recent case, however, in the mainstream, there are many people still imagine large scale modernized agriculture is the best. So some government officer practice, for example, they want to eliminate the corn production in Guizhou province. They think that they prefer. For example, they promote to grow those cash crop, like the fruit or flowers, instead of corn production. However, many peasants refuse. They don't want to grow this kind of cash crop. And for first, corn for the food, for the grain. On the other hand, they can feed the animal with corn. That means they don't need to buy corn from outside. They don't need to import. They don't need a corn to import. So and you find that the small peasants still have this, we can say that it's a wisdom. So once you have a land, don't think about to plant cash crop, you get money and then we buy food. No. The small peasantry For, I mean, the wisdom is first you grow your own food first. You survive first. Don't forget about the cash crop, because the cash crop, the pricing is controlled by the international market, not by the local farmers. So this practice, and you know that they will feel more secure once they grow food on their own land. So in that case, the recent case that a government officer is is sent to jail because of corruption. But during his period, I mean his period, he indeed the force a peasant to grow cash crop, but it failed. That means the resilient from the local resilient of small peasantry is still very strong. Yeah.
There's a lot of interest in our district about trying to get different kinds of financial structures going. And you had mentioned having a women's lending co-op. How does that work? Does the credit, you said a women's like credit union? Does that credit union have to have a license? And how did you guys get the financing? Is it like a lending? How does it work?
And the government has many policy for rural. So for example, Professor Wen, he was the independent board member of the Agricultural Bank of China. And based on his experience in the ABC, I mean that Agricultural Bank of China, they will reserve funding, particularly for the peasants. So this is kind of central government policy. However, how this mean the policy put into practice is largely depends on the village committee. I mean the strategy. The more they join together, and they can has ability to apply for those funding. Individual too, they can also apply this kind of sponsorship for the production and also the machine or other fertilizer, something like that. And but has however once you can apply for that funding in terms of the collectivity status, you can get more funding. And yeah, this is a central, I mean the central government policy. They will reserve funding for collective economy. Yeah, particularly now there are many crises. For example, the economic downturn and also the the sanction from the United States and the global supply, and also there are many uncertainties. So based on their experience, the government have to protect rural society. Because now we have around 200 million peasant workers, 200 million peasant workers in the city. Can you imagine if they all lose job, where they are going, right? So that means the government, and of course those young people. Now we have another, of course, the problem is that kind of a floating population. That means they are mainly peasant workers. They are not completely worker who sell the labor power, because they are peasant worker. That means peasant. That means they still have their land and home village. This is different from the being the proletariat in Marx's sense. So this floating population, sometimes workers, sometimes peasants. So how they have a stable life is a really a challenging task, not only for the government, but also for the young generation. Because now we have quite a lot of young people to become a delivery man. That means like something like a Uber taxi or the food deliver, this kind of semi workers without any formal benefits. And however, as we all know that once you have to get prepared, the in future, because in terms of many crises, so we try our best, even the government try their best to strengthen the rural society, because that means they those the unemployed or the can return to the village and have a new life again. And then we have many cases, even though if they really want to improve their livelihood, they can do it. And we also find that many cases, and our task is to make this kind of initiative, a people initiative, to make visible and let them make alliance. This is now what we are doing. It's not we let or teach them to do it. Peoples already have initiatives, and we have to recognize, make it visible, and make alliance. This is what we are doing now. And after that, and let those people who lose faith or hope in countryside, they will think that they are also ongoing experiment. So they will become more encouraged by those people who already practice alternatives.
Thank you so much. we're down to our last 3 minutes, and because we didn't do it as part of the intro, I'd like to cue Dr. Byrne to just give the quick synopsis of what this Dirt and Democracy series is, and then we'll wrap up.
Certainly. Thank you. Well, this is, I think, episode 6 of our summer series, Dirt and Democracy. And really, we started by exploring some of our local structures. I'm with the local conservation district, which is essentially a watershed government governed by the local residents of an area. We're joined by several staff members and even a board member who's a local resident, who's elected by all the residents of our watershed. And essentially, yes, this series, we've been wanting to dig into different types of organizing, different types of governance structures and democratic processes, and learn even internationally. So this is our first, I think our first voyage internationally with our speakers. And we're looking forward to speaking to folks from India and Nepal coming up soon. And so, Henry, do you have anything else from our typical intro that you want to share?
Nope, just that this series is designed to empower a farmer's social movement centering food sovereignty and agroecology, and we're bringing in folks to speak on many different aspects of that. So it's really great to have all of you join us. Dr. Choi, would you like to say anything in closing?
I think we share the same vision, right? To make those grassroots organizing in different areas, regions, and in the world be visible. And we can join together and work together for a better world. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Professor Troy, are you going to go to the...